Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. And today's interview is with Emile Mosseri. You may hear, by the way, I'm recording this in the middle of a horrible thunderstorm, but I think it adds to the ambiance of the podcast today, the rain in the background. But anyway, Emile Mosseri, I interviewed Emile, I think the first time we talked about this about 12 years ago, maybe, when he was a member of the band The Dig. I guess technically he still is, but I interviewed him when they opened up for the Henry Clay people in D.C. in the Rock and Roll Hotel, at the Rock and Roll Hotel, which is no longer around. And that's when I first met him. So fast forward to 12 years later, and now he is an Academy Award nominee. He's a composer. He was nominated in 2021 for Best Original Score, Academy Award nomination, for his the film score for Minari. But he has a debut solo album out called Heaven Hunters, and we talked about the challenges of the switch of going from, well, first of all, starting as a group songwriter with The Dig. I think there were three songwriters in the band, to composing, writing film scores and TV scores, and now his first solo album. That's a big difference, right? Going from writing with a group to writing with a very specific purpose for someone else. Now you've got a solo album that, again, is called Heaven Hunters. It's out on Greedy Heart Records. It's great. But we certainly talked about those challenges and the differences between those two, among those three, I should say. The difference between and among, I always have to think about that for a minute. Anyway, among those three, we talked about why he likes to write when he's not supposed to be writing. I think the story he tells me was when he was used to give guitar lessons, and when there'd be a break and he'd write between the break, that urgency of the something about writing when you're not supposed to be writing, that's a great time to write. We talked about why having a child is often good for his process, and why social media is never good for it. And I've mentioned this before with songwriters, just the impact that social media has had on the creative process, because if you're not out there experiencing life, what are you going to write about? And he has some great things to say about that. And I love this. It's a great conversation. Again, that different perspective on songwriting. And hey, 12 years later, I have to dig that interview up. I'm not sure if it's not on the site anymore, but I have to dig it up because and it'd be fun to post that. But so that is it. My interview with Emile Mosseri. It's a great one. Let me see. What do I have upcoming? I interviewed Deer Tick today. A couple of the guys in Deer Tick, John and Ian. That was a great conversation. Bethany Cosentino, that's coming up too, so check those out. But anyway, until then, my interview with Emile Mosseri. Yeah, I always start by asking, are you an everyday type of writer, or is it important to write every day, create in some fashion, or do you feel like it's better just to write when you've got the urge to write?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's sort of all convoluted. It's been kind of convoluted for me for the last 4 or 5 years, because I've been writing a lot of music for film. So like, yeah. I used to, just when I was strictly a songwriter for all those years, like feel like, oh, like that sort of Randy Newman school of like, you got to go fishing every day if you want to catch something. Some days you might, you know, have an empty bucket, but you got to go. You know, he said like, you're definitely not going to get anything if you don't try. So you gotta like put in the hours every day and write songs with words, you know. And I sort of subscribed to that for a long time. And then, I moved out to LA and I started, scoring films more. And so I have to write every day.
Right.
You know, and for the last 5 years, I've written music every day. But a lot of it is, it's not all songs. A lot of it is by, you know, as a necessity for like, as I'm like required to, like, I actually do well with accountability too, you know, like,
God, do you?
Yeah, I need, I think it was a struggle with this record, with this record. Cause I was with The Dig, I was accountable to three other people and two other songwriters. Like there was three songwriters in the band and two singers, which in a way is really magical. In a way is like the ultimate nightmare, you know, the two singers, three songwriters combo, like, cause everybody's, at our best, we were really like elevating each other and elevating each other's songs and capturing this sort of, magical thing that we couldn't do on our own. And at our worst, we were kind of competitive and maybe like trying to squeeze songs on the record, and just sometimes made these kind of polite records where like everybody felt represented, but it didn't have necessarily always a specific cohesive style, you know? So I think, but either way, I had that accountability. And with film scoring, you have accountability because you get hired to compose a score, and then you have deadlines and it feels high stakes, and you have that thing, which is helpful. And then with this record, this is my first solo record. It was like, it was just kind of all on me. And I kept on kind of kicking it down the road for years. And then I manufactured accountability with my producer, my good friend Bobby Kerlick, who produced the record. He kind of I blocked out some time with him to finish it. So then I needed that. I needed someone to drag me across the finish line. Like I couldn't self-generate that.
But that's interesting though, because you were doing that writing film scores, and so that it would seem like that would be like you're into that routine, so you feel like you'd have that down, right?
Yeah, it's just so much. It's so much more comfortable writing film scores than writing a record. It's so much. It's your self-worth isn't wrapped up in it in the same way. Your sense of identity isn't wrapped up in it in the same way. Like you're there to serve somebody else's vision. And in a way that helped me creatively, because I was like free of like ego and all that stuff. Like I could write music that I think in a way was better than what I was writing before, because I didn't have to represent me and be like the statement for me. I was just free to actually, and in a way that ended up making me, I think, be able to write music that was more honest or more myself. It's kind of like this, do you know, like Louis Anderson playing Zach Galifianakis's mom on his TV show, because he's got the wig and got the thing, he's able, and playing a woman, he's able to be more himself than, you know what I mean? Like the mask, or it's like, I think Dylan said that too at one point, that like the mask actually lets you be more yourself. It's like this kind of ironic subversion, or like inverse of what you think, you know, like,
yeah,
if you're hiding behind something or a character, you can actually be more yourself. And I think that applied to film scoring for me, where I was just like, because if it sucked, I could always point to the director and be like, right, you made me do this, right. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you're free, you know? Yeah. So I was trying to bring that to my songwriting, and it's a challenge. But I think what helped too is that having another thing, because you can be like, well, I don't need this record to put food on the table for my daughter, you know, so I can make the thing that I want to make. You know, I'm in a tremendous place of privilege and fortune to be able to have a film scoring career, so that I can make the records that, you know, that I don't have to think about like how it can be marketed and you know, how it's going to generate cash, you know?
Do you, speaking of, we have four kids, and I find that having kids has made me tremendously, I know, look, see your face. When I
I'm so impressed with you. I'm in awe. I'm completely off.
So your eyes lit up when I said that. That was great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm 1 year into to my our first, you know, we have
But don't you find, I find that having kids, makes me more disciplined. I mean, I'm a prose writer, not a songwriter, but you know, I had a songwriter tell me once that the worst thing was having all the time in the world. That was far more anxiety producing, but having kids, you don't have all the time. And so has having a child given you that sense of discipline? Because you know you only have some windows to be able to write in.
Totally. It has in a huge way. And it's also sort of changes you, you know, so when you change, you change on a molecular level, you know, when you have a kid, as you know. So I think that helps with writing too. But yeah, the limited time does help in a way, but then there's some times where it's like, fuck, it would be nice to have more, you know, because I'm balancing a lot, but and there's times where I felt like, oh, I'm not, because like right now, for instance, I'm releasing this record, so there's a lot of work that comes into that, like playing shows, putting together a live show, music videos, album art, you know, press, whatever, everything. It all just kind of adds up, and then like generating that stuff, and then at the same time, I'm scoring a TV show. Which has been like just a monumental amount of work. Like it's like an 8-hour TV show, and it's just TV is a whole other animal. It's just like relentless. And you know, I have a baby, so there are times where I'm like, oh fuck, I'm doing all these things, but not doing any of them that well, including, you know, fatherhood and being a husband, you know. But then there are times where you get your arms around it, and you're like, you know, it comes and goes. And I feel like, you know, now I'm in a place where I'm have a lot on my plate, but I am able to write. Also, there's times where I don't like right now. There's a stage in a scoring process where you're not writing music. You're just like conforming music and doing revisions and I'm in that stage in this process of this scoring project. And then I'm like putting together a live show for my record and like working on the release of my record. So like I'm not, and then I have my, you know, my family life. So I'm not really writing that much music like in the last month. And I think I feel a loss of something. I feel like I'm not, you know, because it's a ton of work, but it's not the writing stage. It's a different stage. It's creative and it's collaborative and it's inspiring in other ways, but it's not the writing, you know? And I think that's what I want to get back to more of, is just want to write another record like immediately, you know?
Songwriters do talk. I hear songwriters mention the anxiety that they feel when they haven't written, you know, for a while. That, you know, those that don't write every day at some point feel like, okay, I'm starting to get anxious, and that anxiety is going to make it worse. Like the anxiety compounds on the anxiety, and then it almost becomes like a rut because you're anxious about, oh, I should be writing and I'm not.
I can relate. That's like, it's not helpful. It's like being anxious about being anxious. It's like,
yeah.
It's you're not doing yourself any favors. But it is. Yeah, it's like anything. If the longer it goes, the more you feel like, oh, I'm rusty, and then you feel like shit about yourself when you do write. And then, so yeah, there's an element of it that you, I feel like you have to nurture. You have to take care of it, your creativity in whatever ways. And then there's, but I also find that when I'm not, before I had a kid, especially, I'm able to write a lot more when I'm not supposed to. You know, like when I would teach guitar lessons when I was a kid, like when my students would be in the bathroom, I would write, I'd come up with something that I loved really when I had no time, Mm-hmm. Whereas when I had like you were saying earlier, when you talk to songwriters that say like infinite time is just is daunting and can be paralyzing, because you're like, oh, I should be writing right now. I have to be right, you know, I have to write something great right now. That's really hard to do when you're in that mindset. So for me, like, you know, when I was writing, like I'm supposed to be doing a score, then I would sneak off and write some songs, and those would be good songs, or, you know, songs that I was proud of. And same and vice versa. Like if I'm supposed to be working on my record, like I was recording a record once in like Northern California, and I just had met Miranda July. I just scored a film for her, and I was like sneaking off in the mornings writing music for her because it wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. I ended up being productive that way. So it's like always kind of like never looking the thing in the eye that because it's so scary to look at it in the eye because the stakes or the pressure or whatever. So you always have to like look at something else off center and write that, and then just keep moving your head, you know, and not actually like, it's like a delicate thing. It sounds self-serious to say maybe, but it's like a delicate thing. You have to take care of it. Your creativity. You have to like, if you touch it, it'll fall apart.
Yeah. Well, when I taught on the college level, I would tell my students just a reminder that the writing process is always taking place. It's not, you know, if they thought that, oh, unless I'm physically writing, I'm not actually writing. I'm like, actually, when you're eating, when you're sleeping, when you're working out, when you're walking, you're writing. It's something's going on up there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Process. And I think that always helps people when they realize that, like, things are going on. You may not know it, but they're working themselves out up there. And I think that can lessen the anxiety that we have when, oh, I should be writing. And, you know, but thinking of the writing process is always taking place. That's always helped me. Occasionally, songwriters will tell me, gosh, who told me this recently? That to lessen the importance of the process, they will deliberately write lyrics on things like hotel stationery, utility bills. Because if you write them in a notebook, you know, that Moleskine notebook, then it makes it serious. But if you just like, oh, like I'm in a hotel right now, oh, I'm going to write some lyrics on this paper, it makes it less precious. And that
can
the anxiety.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Where you're not, you can just, it doesn't feel like set in stone. It doesn't feel like it has to be this statement that completely like sums up who you are, or, you know, or it feels like it defines you, you know? Yeah. There's interesting hearing different people talk about their process. It's like really helpful. Like even just the giants, like you think in songwriting, like you have this sort of like, in my brain, you have the like people like Neil Young saying that he won't even bother writing unless it's like a full moon out or something, you know, like he said that right, once. Right. And then other people like Paul Simon or Leonard Cohen that'll spend 20 years working on one song.
Yeah.
And it's more this sort of focus. And there's no, and you know, Leonard Cohen, you know, or Dylan was more like also like in the sort of like, it just kind of moves through him and he writes really fast. But that he seemed to be in the thing where he was doing both. Like it was all the time. He wasn't just writing when it was a full moon. He was writing all the time.
Right.
And it was all constantly flowing through him. And it didn't seem to be agonizing for him. But it seems, but also this is what people put out into the world. Like who fucking knows, you know, like.
Right. That's what they're really doing.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. Like, cause for me, it's like, I don't know. I always took comfort in people saying like Joe Strummer saying like, oh, it's fucking hard work, like songwriting, like we just work harder. We're not, you know, I remember he said something like, oh, we're not geniuses. Like Sam Cooke, that's a genius. Like we just try harder. You know what I mean? And it was like, right. It was like, we just try harder than everybody else. That's why we're the best, you know? And I feel like that was so, I mean, it's such a cool thing to say. like publicly, because it's like in a way not self-deprecating, but just like it's an inviting thing to hear. It's like, oh, okay, like if I'm struggling, I'm not alone. And it doesn't mean you don't have to be touched by the songwriting gods, you know, to be able to make something great. Like you hear about Paul Simon like agonizing over every word.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, and the songs are great. So, but yeah, it is interesting. The comfort, the things you find comfort in other people's process.
Yeah. I mean, the ritual, I mean, I could just tell you so many stories. I mean, I interviewed Britt Daniel from Spoon. This is a couple of years ago. And he told me that when he first started writing songs, he couldn't afford a couch. So he wrote like on the floor, sitting on the floor. But he still writes on the floor now, even though he has a couch, because it's what he learned to do. And that's
wow.
What he likes to do. So he still writes on the floor. He's like, I have a couch, but I sit on the floor next to the couch.
And right. That's so cool.
I thought that was so interesting that we take that, you know, that ritual. And I guess, you know, that's what I want to talk about next is that, like, for me at least, like, and I'm a prose writer, but I will never write and revise in the same chair. Always got to be different, because mm-hmm. I think you separate that process as much.
You let it all. One part of the process is what? Just letting it all pour out of you. And then the other part's more editorial.
Yes. Yeah. And so I will, you know, if I'm at home, I'll write in one chair, revise in another. Even ideally a different room also. I know that I'd like to write in the morning. I'm not a night person. There are certain things I like to have with me. And I think that's important, like to know about what makes me most effective. So do you think about that at all? Like, is there a ritual to that process as far as like time of day, place, things like that?
I think for me, night is easier for me. I think it's also because it's what I'm not supposed to be doing. I think what's hard for me about mornings is that I have coverage for my daughter, especially now, you know what I mean? I have coverage for my daughter in the morning and, you know, from 9 to 5. So I have like, I'm like, this is my time, you know? And it's way easier for me to like sneak off after she goes down, you know, and write these days, like between 7 and midnight, you know? Yeah. But I think it's also like, yeah, where you are, an instrument too. I think also like, if we're talking about writing lyrically, if we're talking about writing words or talking about writing melodies, it's a different thing, you know? I mean, so it's the same in a lot of ways, but for me, melodies come easier to me than lyrics. There's just a vulnerability there, you know? And so I think, you know, writing melodies or unlocking things, like sometimes it's a different environment. Sometimes it's a different instrument. Like if you get it, if you're playing, like if I'm find myself in a friend's house and playing on their piano and I'm not there to write songs, I feel like I can, if two people are sneaking off and I have a minute there, I feel like it comes very, very easy, you know?
No pressure. It's no pressure, right?
There's no pressure. And there's a sound. There's also sonically, like, and spiritually, like a sound of something that's not so familiar to you will unlock things for me. Because even just playing the same two chords on another instrument, like they don't sound tired to me. They sound new to me, and I'm reacting. I also like it's for me what unlocks music for me or lyrics for me is like reacting to something, you know, like it's that same concept of like, you know, when if you're with somebody and you're writing something or you're writing a song and you misheard somebody, said, did you like, I sang some gibberish and someone said, oh, did you say this? And I said, no, but that's fucking good. You know, like that right. person wrote that lyric as a reaction to something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's the way that I've been able to be the most, I've had the most success in terms of creativity and productivity. Cause that's what films you know, film scoring is you're reacting to somebody else's story and somebody else's thing. Or so I think the same thing applies, that same concept applies even just to an instrument if you're by yourself, because you're, something sounds new to you, and then you're, there's two, this melody or these chords sound completely different on this, and then, and they don't, and then you're not in the, and you're in a new space. It's like writing in a different space. If I could be, if I could have more than this one room that I'm in right now, is my garage where I work 99% of the time. If I could have 10 of these, I would write more and better music, I feel like, but maybe not. Maybe you just, that becomes your normal. And then you, you know, I don't know. But I love the idea of just taking care of yourself, finding out, like Britt Daniels, like writing on the floor, because he knows that that's, it's routine and it feels, and it's, because in that he feels comfortable and he feels he's able to channel this amazing stuff that he's channeling. Also, I always wonder with somebody like him, like his voice, he's one of my favorite singers. His voice is so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And his lyrics are amazing. And I wonder, like, sometimes, like, it's rare that you have both in a way. I feel like a lot of times people that can sing in a way that's so, like, singular, they don't, like, the lyrics don't need to be great as much, but his are. You know what I mean? It's, I wonder sometimes about that, where, like, I don't know.
How you should go back and listen to that interview, because he has tells me a great story. Oh, it was great, great interview. But he tells me a story. He said he will go to bars with his laptop and listen to conversations, and he'll write them down. And it's like, I can.
That's amazing.
You walk out there, so you walk in a bar, there's Britt Daniels with his laptop, and you're going, better watch what I'm going to say. But he, I mean, he said that in the interview. He's like, I will go to a bar with my laptop, and I'll just listen. When I hear something good, I write it down.
Hey, he's a fisherman. That's an amazing approach, or just another tool to use, you know. Like, I mean, there's also that kind of, that theory, it reminds me of that, the idea of just the antenna, like what you were saying, you're always writing when you're not writing. It's like, you know, Bowie seeing the "Oh, You Pretty Things" on a billboard for some advertisement, and then he writes this song about, you know, about aliens. But it's just, it was just there. Like, if you're always, it's everywhere. Lyrics and ideas are everywhere if you have your radar on and your antenna on. Like, so that's, but that's taking it to another level, which I think is really cool. Like, actually just this more espionage thing of going to a bar with the laptop.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's cool though, but it makes sense, because his lyrics sound conversational in a way, like they, in a way that's really universal and inviting, but also not it never feels like mundane.
Yeah,
that's what I worry about even just where my brain goes now, just having this conversation with you. I worry about, like, social media and how much we're robbing ourselves of our bandwidth for that antenna to be up, because if we're filling it with all this information about what everybody's eating for lunch and what everybody's doing in their careers and what, you know, there's a lot of car alarms and busy signals that could unlock songs that you're depriving yourself of the ability to access. And I think you know, it's something I struggle with, because it's so, also for me, because I'm like, I used to be, as you know, like on tour all the time with, you know, from when I met you with Joey and them till about 4 or 5 years ago, I was on the road, and you get this feedback from playing shows. And you get sort of, even if there's 10 people at the show, it's a transference of energy, and you're feeding off of it. Whereas when you live as a composer and you're not playing live, the feedback's digital, and the feedback is oh, somebody saw this movie, or unless you're like some kind of a psycho and you go to the movie theater to 30 nights in a row and watch the movie scored,
right,
then you're not really having any sort of communal experience. So social media and Instagram, all this shit, like, will, in a way, where I get caught with it is where I, like, it's a way to get feedback from people. It's a way to like get connected with other artists. Cause there's a lot of artists, there's artists that I've made records with. There's artists that I've become good friends with that I really admire their work. And I found out admire my work through that medium, through like DMing on Instagram. So it's like this, there is something to it that is pure, but the danger is that's like a small percentage of it that justifies like 90% of the time, just like that I'm on there just wasting my creative energy. And so that's, I don't know, I get like, I think when you talk about like sounds in the world and inspiring things, that's exactly what, you know, it's like reacting to something. It's really like hard to self-generate everything, you know.
I interviewed Robin Hitchcock, this is like 5 years ago, and he was the only one to tell me. He said, listen, absolutely, social media has harmed my songwriting process. He admitted, he said it in the interview, he was like, I spent too much time on it, and because I do, it's absolutely affected my songwriting because I'm not engaging with the world. And he was, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how it works. I mean, yeah, but it's not complicated. If you're not interacting with the world, how, you know, it seems pretty simple to me that you're going to run out of things to write about if you're not interacting.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But there's another challenge even without social media, of just the sort of like the more domestic late 30s LA life of like being working as a composer and having a child and being in this room that I'm in right now from 9 to 5 every day, that is going to also, even without social media, can also, you know, feel stagnant and affect your writing in a way. And I think it's about like trying to find ways to push against that, if that means, you know, like going with the, you know, like I'll be going to New York in September to play some shows and bringing the girls with me and spending a couple of weeks there, or going to Europe in January for a month, or things like that, that like sometimes for work I'll have to be in other places. I think that will help. I think it's but the catch 22 about the social media thing is that, yes, that's true. If you're on social media, you're interacting with the world less, but it sells itself to you as interacting with the world more. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm by myself in this room versus interacting with people and having conversations with people on text or DMs on Instagram, then it's like in here, it's just me, but in my phone, there's all these, you know, people.
Yeah.
But it's not really, you're not really connecting and you're not really interacting. It's a vicious
track. And they're not spontaneous. I mean, they're not spontaneous interactions. You're interacting with
people. No, especially when you're talking to people that you admire, too, like right. That side of it, when you're like, it's curated, you're self-curating. I mean, you're always self-curating out in the world too, but you have less time, you know what I mean? When you're having a conversation with somebody in real time, you don't have as much time to craft your response. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I'm going to read this quote to you. This is my favorite quote by a writer, and songwriters love this. So the novelist is E.L. Doctorow, and he said, and I want your reaction to this quote. Writing is like driving at night in the fog. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'll repeat that. So writing is like driving at night in the fog. You can only see as far as your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. So for me, at least, isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's amazing. So to me, that feels like, okay, it's okay to be lost. It's okay to be blind.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, and if you're not lost, you're kind of fucked in a way. Like, that's what I take from, like, if you're not lost and you're not, you know, riddled with self-doubt or whatever, then you must have something dialed in to the point where it's on autopilot and you're not actually growing, you know, which in a way is super inspiring to hear that quote, but it's also disheartening because it's like, okay, this is till death. This feeling is like, the feeling of being lost is more than anything, it's comforting though. Cause you're like, yeah, I've had people say things like that where like, oh, like it's good to be lost, but this is sort of a personification of that, or like there's a visual here of that quote that embodies that idea that like, oh yeah, if you can make it the whole way, even if you don't know where you're going.
Yeah. And for me, at least, I think when I start writing, again, I'm a prose writer, not a songwriter, but I don't think I have any right knowing what it's supposed to look like at the end. That's, you know, there's no way I'm supposed to know that. And if I did know that, then I think I'm fucked, because then it's doesn't allow for those diversions of kind of like, maybe.
No. No, it doesn't allow. Yeah. No, I love that.
Yeah.
Thank you for these. These are really helpful.
Oh, I've got a bunch of them. So,
what else you got? Hit me again.
Okay. Here's that Martin, since Martin Amis just passed away, I've got a good one from him. A writer's life is half ambition and half anxiety, and there has to be both. It is no good writing a novel and feeling fine, and it is no good writing a whole novel and feeling miserable. So, you know,
no, that's great. That's great. It's not going to help you to. Yeah, you need both. Yeah, I feel like if you see. I remember I had an experience with the first film that I scored was this film called Last Black Man in San Francisco, and it premiered at Sundance, and I was terrified, and I was really excited until I walked into that room and I saw all these other people that I admire that I didn't know, but I just knew who they were and knew their work, like in the theater with me, and the movie started and it was complete agony, just complete. Like, I ruined this film. Everybody's going to know, you know, it's like every note sounded like shit. And to me, and it was like that. Maybe because it was the first one, it ended up later in the day, it ended up being fine, and people responded to it, and I got some generous and encouraging and effusive words for some of these people that I was afraid that were seeing it, you know. But you know that I always think of that story. I always think, well, if I sat there and was like, I fucking nailed it, then I'm dead in the water. You know what I mean?
Right.
But at the same time, what this quote's saying is that if you're like, I'm shit and I ruined this, and then you're not getting, then that's not useful, because you're just like, then you're going to throw it in.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, I'm not going to, what's the point? Like, if the agony outweighs this, your self-belief, then why do it? You know what I mean? Why put yourself through that? So yeah, that's nice to know. That's got to be some kind of a split.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.